Hey John,
Hey, Gavin.
how you doing, brother?
I'm good, and you?
Good man, not too bad at all, thank you. Just winding down for the evening, getting ready for bed.
So are you partly responsible for my birthday workout? You didn't tell
So
me I was supposed to time it, so I didn't time it.
yeah, it's a time one, man. It was a good one.
But I did the 15. I did the squats, the trap bar deadlifts and chin-ups all in one set.
Nice, man.
I had to divide the bench presses into two.
That's all good. Mate, that's great, man. Like that's a tough workout. If you're thinking about like because it's all down to relative strength, right? So that's showing this you've got a good relative strength ratio. So if you're able to perform 15 reps straight out with like body weight of the squats, like body weight on your bench press, chin-ups, like that's a good amount of relative strength at the age you're at as well, man. That's brilliant.
I had to take the weight down on the sled pull and sled drag, but I was talking to the coach and he said he thinks it's because it's a rubber floor. 'Cause I used to
Yeah.
do a lot more than that, like when they had before they had wood slides. So I was sliding on wood and that would seem a lot easier than trying to pull it or drag it.
You need some good like AstroTurf style carpeting. Do you know what I mean? Like that'll be the best ones, but rubber flooring's super tough, man.
So I did it. I got he took two good pictures of when I was doing it. It's like I looked really good, but
Oh, there, man. Good work. Good work. So I did that one when I was, well, a few years younger. Greg's never done it though. He bottled it. He didn't get it done. So we have to give him some.
he didn't tell me time it, and so that when I told when I sent it to him, he says, "What's your time?" I said, "I didn't time it because I didn't see it in my instructions."
Yes, it's tough. I think I've got it on, I think it was filmed somewhere. So it was on Facebook somewhere of me doing it. I think it was like 5, 6 minutes I did it in. It was
I mean,
brutal.
I did my squats like in a minute 26. I did my chin-ups, my pull-ups. I did overhand. I did that in
Yeah.
46 seconds. I think it was like almost a minute and a half for the trap bar deadlifts.
John, you know what you have to do, mate? You're gonna have to refilm it, retime it. You have to do it again. We need proof, brother.
Well, let's do
We'll
that when
see
my
judo, we'll see technique, we'll get it all on. We'll see how
I
these
wasn't
guys do.
happy. I'll do it when I'll do it in a month. How's that?
Good man. Good man. Well done, John. Boys, welcome to the Pickard didn't have it. Welcome to the call, boys. Thompson, good to see you. Vihar's in the background there somewhere as well. I know he's got his headphones in. Yes, my man. Good to see you, brother.
Hey Thompson, I videoed all the exercises. So I have video proof that I did it.
Man. Jeffrey, good to see you, man. How you doing?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
You're good. All good, brother. All good. Rob, is it cold in Australia now?
I'll pretend cold. I'm not going to tell anyone in the UK or North America that it's cold, but it's winter.
Yeah.
So,
Okay. Where are you in Australia, man?
Canberra, national capital. So it's inland. So it is a colder part of the country. Hence, I've got a beanie on. We do get snow a couple of times a year. You get into some sort of minus, low minus 1, 2, 3 Celsius, that kind of weather.
Nice.
Kind of a bit desert-like, so we get hot in summer, cold in winter.
Yeah, man. Wrap it up. Get those steps in, bro.
It's taking the big old dog for a walk.
Nice, man. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Gents, anything that's you're happy about this last 7 days? Tell me, drop in the chat what's gone on well for you. Thompson, give me an update as well while the guys are jumping in the chat and tell me some stuff. Tell me, I know we caught up a little bit today, but give me a win from today in the last 7 days.
Back at it, leg day today, so all good.
There we go.
Just see how the recovery goes now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Jeffrey, how about yourself, man? Anything phenomenal happened for you the last 7 days?
I don't know if it's phenomenal, but I'm a university professor on now on summer break, so there's a lot more workout time, and
There we go.
so it's a win that's kind of independent. It just happens. We're on break. There's a lot more time.
So we're doing 2-a-days now, yeah?
Almost. I'm gonna go up a mountain in Colorado in September. So the
Oh,
morning,
nice.
there's a lot more running up and down hills to get ready for that. Then I, well, you know, when it's our winter, no one's going outside. So it's been very hot, and yeah, there's just more time.
Enjoy it, man. Enjoy it. Get after it. Challenge yourself this next six. It's how long do you get? 6 weeks or so?
A lot more than that. Yeah, we get like 16 weeks. No,
Oh.
14, 14.
Oh, mate. Rake it in. Rake it in. Right. So that brings on to a good point, right? So, like with the discussion today, looking at dropping body fat and holding on or even building muscle as you're dropping body fat as well. So that's the topic of today and how to maximize it. One second, I'm just gonna let Shalash in as well. And how to maximize that type of goal or reward we're looking for out of training and lifestyle and so forth. Hey, Shalash. And 14 weeks is a great time period to really go at it. You've got a real good dedicated time. And if you've got more free time to do that, you can really set some big goals there, Jeffrey, man. Like you can crush it. Like even if you set a lofty goal that you like, it scared you to try and do it. Like, is that even achievable? Set it. Because even if you fall short, you're still going to be in a way better place otherwise, right? And once you're there, it's way easier to maintain, right? Even if like you can't do the amount of training you would do with the time you have over the next 14, 16 weeks, like to maintain that then is just way easier. So this is why I do like to challenge on. I think I was discussing this with Ben once. It's like at one point in your life, like we would say for men, like get to 10 to 12% body fat. Just feel what it's like. Just even if it's once, or even if you're just shy of it, just to see what it's actually like to get that lean, what you've got to go through to do it. It's not to stay there forever, but it's a case of I know exactly what to do. I know I can do it. And you basically teach yourself a structure on how to get lean. I've done it a few times. It's not, you can make it as hard or as easy as you want it to, basically, right? There's strategies behind it. I'll share some of those with you on the call today. But right now, how many on the call? Sorry, there's some messages coming in the chat there as well. Okay, how many of you on the call right now are looking to drop body fat and keep muscle? Rob, Jeff, Vihar, man, we gotta get you stacked. You're shredded already, man. Don't pull that one on me. I saw the state of you when we were at the muscle camp. Gotta get some meat on your bones, man. Let's go. Yeah, so a few of you on the call, right? So let me see who else is on. Chris Menchaca is on. Sean's on. So guys, I know some of you got your videos off. If you've got any questions, just drop them in the chat, okay? If you can open your videos up as well and just join, that'll be good as well. But if you can't, that's all good. So there's a few things to think about in dropping body fat, right? How you doing, brother? Here's Chris. How you doing, man?
What's up,
So
Gav?
Jeffrey,
Doing well, man. Good to see you.
good to see you, man. So Jeffrey, let's I'm not going to pick on you by any means, but I'd love to give you some strategies. I know you probably got some stuff in place already. What are you currently working on? Have you set the goal to do anything like that over the next 14 weeks?
Yeah, the so I work with a local trainer in person, and he wants 20 pounds off before school starts. So
Okay.
that's kind of that's the those are the marching orders. The first three are gone, so there's still 17 to go over the next I guess how many weeks we have. We've got like 12 weeks left of our 14. So that's his th those are his marching orders. And now he asks every day, what'd you eat? Did you take supplements? Did you go up the hill? Just constant reinforcement of the goal.
Yeah. So looking at like, so obviously this depends on like estimation of body fat percentage and so on. So just as a general rule, just to keep it simple, for every 1% of body fat, you're looking at about 2 pounds of body weight drop for 1% body fat. So if somebody is wants to get the 10% body fat and they're currently 24, 25, you're looking at obviously that's a big amount of body weight to lose type of thing, right? But the weight on the scale doesn't dictate that. So always frame that in your mind, whereas yes, the weight's going to come off. So I mean, doing this right now with a couple of clients where we're setting some targets in terms of body weight, but as we hit certain points, if you can start to manipulate the deficit with different macronutrients, your body weight's going to change, right? So if I gave you more carbohydrate, for example, you're going to hold on to way more water in your muscle. Right. So for every 1 gram of carbohydrates, you're going to hold 3 to 4 grams of water. So if, for example, we're losing body weight and then I keep you in a deficit and I just switch fat for carbohydrates and I give you the equivalent calories, you're going to hold way more body weight than you would if you kept that fat and low carb, right? So this weight on the scale can be a little bit misleading, but as long as the progress pictures are changing, and this is where obviously we've been monitoring pictures for all our lives, myself, Ben, Dan, Greg, like we see a body, we see your pictures come in on the weekend and we're like, yep, that's changing. Nope, we need to make an adjustment type of thing. We'll look at those things as well, right? Now, in terms of as you're dropping that body fat, the best way I've seen to add muscle and drop body fat at the same time is you have to perform. Performance is one of your biggest keys. So you've got a catch 22 here. If you haven't optimized muscular contraction and the ability to output, you have to go down a different angle for that. Now, what I mean by performance is you're going to need to set a calorie deficit that isn't huge because you're going to need calories in the system to drive performance in the weight room, in the cardio work you're going to do, the daily activity you're going to do. So you're looking at a 10 to 15% deficit, nothing crazy. That way you've got enough in the tank to really go at the training you're going to go at. And typically what you'll see there is the more activity you can do, the higher calories you're going to be on in that deficit. So the diet becomes way easier and you've got something called an energy flux. So with an energy flux, you'll have better nutrient partitioning because calories are the activity is high alongside your calories. So you can partition calories in and out of cells way better. And you'll find you'll hold way more lean mass in a deficit. So that's one of the best ways to drop body fat and keep muscle at the same time. Now, how many of you feel confident to that you've optimized your training output with the ability of full muscular contractions, owning every inch of the range and range of motion, stable at all joints, and being able to crank out as much volume with intensity at the same time? Pretty tough, right? Especially like the guys, especially who've come to muscle camp that have seen how we coach that type of thing and the ability, like how much more we could have pushed you. You know what I mean? So
Hey,
Miguel, were you gonna
yeah.
say something?
Yeah, I was gonna say I can do it, but do I consistently do it? That's, I mean, definite no. You know, there's some days where, you go in to train and it's just, I don't want to say pushing weight from point A to point B, but, I don't do that. But it's like some days you're really dialed in on the contractions, and other days, it's, you're just struggling just to get through the session.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest driver for that?
Recovery.
Okay, so what drives recovery?
My biggest pitfall is I sleep. I think my sleep is shit. But I think maybe some of that comes down to nutrition. I don't think I always get enough carbs or consistent carbs.
There we go. So you can see the straight away the thing I've said that keeping calories a little bit higher can help you perform better for better body comp results, which obviously then carries over to sleep. So if sleep is poor, we have to look at the different angles of sleep because obviously sleep is where you're going to recover. It's where you're going to be able to perform the next day if you're optimized, right?
Yep.
So we have to look at, are you able to fall off the sleep? Are you waking up through the night? Specifically, what times of the night are you waking up? Because that can give us an indication of a few items or a few things that could be a potential, right?
Yeah.
So for you, Dale, have you got your sleep optimized for home life? And now, right now, are you shutting off blue light before bed? Are you eating a good couple of hours before bed? Dark room, cool room, like sleep environment like that tends to help. So give me an understanding of what's going on for you with sleep.
Well, like a couple nights ago, I had a beautiful night of sleep. It was like 8.5 hours, probably only 10 minutes wake time, hour and a half of deep sleep, hour and a half of REM sleep.
Nice.
Last night, I had like 2 hours of wake time and not even an hour of deep sleep. And today I was just, it's just been struggle just to get through the day, but you know, you can see it. But, and I'm looking and I'm trying to think, okay, what did I do different yesterday than I did the day before? And it's like, well, okay, we went grocery shopping last night or yesterday evening. So because of that, we didn't have time to make dinner. So we swung through and got fast food. I had a Coke and it was like that last meal. And I, you know, so I got home and I was like, I should probably take some digestive enzymes. Didn't have any. So I, you know, took some apple cider vinegar and, but it's like trying to recover, you know, something that just.
You'll find you can't get away with that type of stuff too often, right? So straight away, if you've got fast food, you got a Coke, caffeine, sugar, there's obviously more fat in that system as well in terms of the, probably the fast food you selected, but
yeah,
that's a different effect on the digestive system that you're normally used to. So if you're thinking way different foods, way different distribution of digestion, a little bit more in gallbladder in terms of fat intake, there's a lot of stuff going on there that your body has to deal with at the time that it doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Straight away, your wake-up time is going to be probably a good couple of hours, or you're not going to get into as much deep sleep and so forth. So it's one of those things that if that is the case and you're not sleeping, the next day, the expectation is I'm probably not going to output. I could probably push it a little bit, but the dial to really hone in and do that is not going to be there, you know?
Yeah.
So it's building that blueprint of like, if I haven't prepared a meal and those options, what when it's light? It's light, right? So it might be
I don't know if it's me or you, but you're not coming through real good.
Or some whey protein. So,
yep.
How am I doing now? Am I coming up?
Hey, still kind of breaking up. I don't know if anybody else can weigh in, if it's just me or you.
He's pausing for me too.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Good time to take a drink.
Let me know when I'm coming through better, boys. All good?
That's it, Clara.
That's better.
There we go. So where was I going? Yeah, so if you're in that time where you haven't prepped dinner in those evenings and you know, right, there's a fast food option here, or there's I'm going to sleep better with something light at home, then you make something easy at home. So one of the lighter options I would run with this, obviously you can go cottage cheese with a bit of whey protein or some Greek yogurt, low-fat Greek yogurt with some protein, some berries, or mine and Ben's chocolate eggs, or Ben's chocolate eggs, egg whites, couple of eggs, collagen protein over the top, berries on it, done. So you got a bolus load of protein, which is going to be releasing as you sleep, very low glycemic fruits, collagen's in there as well. So straight away, you're not going to get the blood sugar swings and the digestive issues from eating fast food and a Coke, right?
Yeah. So
you have to consider when you eat something like that close to bed, your blood glucose is going to go up 100%.
Yep.
Now your insulin then has to go up to go and move that around the body and store it where it needs to store it. So think of it like this, the bigger dose you have, I can't remember who I explained this to the other day on a call, but I tried to give an analogy of the swimming pool diving boards. So you imagine you got a meter diving board and you could jump off, you get into the water and so on. And you got, I think it might've been Chalash actually. There's a 3 meter diving board, right? If I jumped off the 3 meter diving board compared to the 1 meter, how deep would I go? Way deeper.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bigger height, right?
Right.
Same. If you have a bolus dose of food like that before bed or later on in the day, Coca-Cola, lots of sugar, lots of salt, lots of caffeine in there. You're driving up a lot of blood glucose from the cortisol as well, from the caffeine. So that means insulin's higher. So the higher it goes, the deeper you got to drop. So the deeper you drop, the lower your blood sugar goes. When you're sleeping, your body is going to bring up cortisol to bring your blood glucose back up. So that's why people wake up in the night more times than not. It's low blood glucose, typically. Not everybody, but typically, especially if you're looking at food intake. So it's managing that last meal so it's nice and easy to digest. It's not spiking blood glucose too high. Nice and easy, and oof, you'll start to sleep way deeper because you're just nice and steady. So that's why we recommend 2 to 3 hours before bed. Get in a good place. with food. Keep that nice and light, easy to digest, and your sleep should improve pretty well. Now, this might be a one-off for you, Dale, to be fair, but the whole thing about like being able to perform in the gym, having enough calories to perform, that's going to be the biggest limiter for a lot of people. Now, on the other end, if you can do that, that's great, right? So it's having the right macronutrients to do that. You're still going to need a deficit to drop the body fat, but you're going to need a lot of activity to keep the calories as high as possible to make the diet easier, but to perform. So your deficit increases more from the performance. So you have to have the ability to output. So your aerobic fitness needs to be on point. Mm-hmm. Hit some hits training every week without fail to keep your VO2 max high, right? And then you need those contractions on the end ranges on every inch of the movement. Be able to lift heavy and stable. Like there should be no breakages here. So this is where that foundation phase of training comes in, like massively. If you've worked on that, you should be locked and loaded for performance. Right. So if, for example, we had you on the hack squat in MI40, Dale.
Right.
We'd be having like 3-4 plates a side and we're doing 5 sets of 10. Right.
Yep.
Like that's a lot of work to do. And then we're doing leg extensions, then we're doing leg curls, then we're like, and we're going at it, like we're going, but you have to recover from that. So you're going to need calories. That's driving the deficit. So you're going to need to recover from that. Now, if you can't do that type of training, you've got a different scenario to give, because you're going to have to use a calorie deficit a little bit more to drive the fat down. And you have to be strategic with the weights you lift, with the amount of protein you take in, to keep hold of muscle tissue as long as you can and not have the deficit drive too body fat off too quick.
Yep.
Because you can create a super large deficit and all you're going to drop is muscle mass, which is the total right. opposite of what you want. Right. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep.
So the ideal scenario, you're going to be losing about 1% of body fat per week. That's the fastest rate I would go. Right. So based off the amount, the reason I started the call, Jeffrey, was like when looking at somebody that's 10%, let's say you aim for 10% body fat, right? And you were 20% body fat. So that's 10% to lose. Well, that's about 20 pounds. Right. So
yeah.
I'm not saying you were 20%, you're going to be 10 when you finish, but depending on where your start point was, but that's pretty much give or take a good 20, 22 pounds you're going to lose to drop 10% body fat. So with that aspect, you're going to need to calculate, well, what type of deficit do I need to create that 1% loss every week? Right. So now we got a good start point. So it might be over that 15%. It might be 25%. It might be 30%. But now you're at a risk of like, well, shit, I got to keep hold of this muscle now. This is a bigger deficit. I got to be smart with my training. So it can't be I'm doing high intensity, high volume weight training work to really drive energy flux and 12,000-15,000 steps a day, and I'm doing cardio every morning. Like, you ain't getting away with it. You're gonna lose muscle for sure, because your percentage of weight loss at that point is gonna be way over 1%. Plus, what's gonna happen if you even tried that at that deficit and you pushed all that training and you pushed all that cardiovascular work and all those steps? What would happen?
So you'd be exhausted.
Exhausted.
Yeah.
So your performance drops. What else would happen when you're exhausted if your performance drops?
Cortisol goes up.
Cortisol is definitely going to go up for sure. But what else is going to really kick in? Because you're driving performance now. You're doing a lot of volume. You're doing a lot of intensity. What does your body need at that point to recover from it?
Get hungry.
You're going to get hungry. Like, you're going to get hungry. Your cravings are going to kick right in. Right, because you're doing a high amount of intense work. Which macronutrient fuels the high amount of intense work? Glucose. Your carb cravings are going to go through the roof. So you have to be smart, man. Like, there's no way you're going to stick to that. And this is where people falter all the time. So having protein at a super high level, if you haven't got the carbs and the fats to really, like, especially the carbs for the high intensity work, there's no way you're going to be able to push volume. Mm-hmm. You're going to do low reps, heavier base training, so your fatigue is minimal amount of sets. So that means you're going to have to do lighter aerobic work. You're going to have to do more steps like Rob's doing right now. because that's easy to recover from. It's not going to drive cortisol up, and it's not going to drive glucose energy systems up. So it's a totally different scenario. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we have to strategize with what can you commit to? What are you able to commit to? And that drives the output that you're going to be able to give.
Kevin, you got any advice if, like, when you start to plateau? So I've gone through probably exactly what you just described. You know, it's been probably like a year and a half I've been in the program. First, well, maybe nearly 2 years, but first, you know, I was packing a lot more weight, had to do a lot of foundational work, got down pretty low, you know, lost muscle mass along the way, but there was more body fat to lose. So I probably got down to around that 12% range, which for me was about like 92 to 94 kilos.
Yeah.
Then went into a bit of a bulk phase, put on more fat than I wanted to. Like, it was my first time really, you know, aiming for a lean bulk, but I just don't think I had the macros or the training dialed in. So put on more fat than I wanted to. Now coming back in, and I tried with Andrew, I kind of wanted to go off that harder cut for a shorter period of time, but did exactly what you just described. Like, cortisol was high, deficit was way too high. I was just tired, giving into the cravings on weekends. So and I sort of plateaued, like, you know, lost a couple of kilos quick again, stalled at around 102 kilos. We've reset the calories back up to more like 2,400 for me. But I find I'm still just pretty much plateauing. Like, as we introduce a lot more carbs, obviously yeah. It popped up a little bit, but now it's kind of flattened out again at about 102. Nowhere near that sort of one, you know, so say 2 pounds a week or 1 kilo a week, nowhere near. Like, I'm just... some weeks I'm down a couple of hundred grams, then I'm back up the next week and down and up. Yeah. And I kind of wonder, like, do I just need to give it longer? I am now that mindset shift to just go for performance in the gym and almost take my eyes off the scale a little bit, because I don't want to. It's almost like the calories I'm on should be working. But it's I've either got the deficit a bit off, but then when I go lower, I get back into that feeling of being run down, stressed, angry, not recovering. Training feels pretty good, but the weight's just not sort of budging.
I would track everything going into my mouth for about 2 weeks. I've been there before, man. This is all I did. I was like, I thought I knew what I was eating, and I tracked every minuscule that went through my mouth, drinks, everything. I weighed everything out for 2 weeks, and I thought I was eating a certain calorie amount, and I was about 600 calories over every day on average. I was like, right, okay, I need to dial that in. So I just had to get accurate there. Now, I'm not saying that's you, but that's one, like, all I look at is what is a checklist I would go through just to rule out. Now, I would do that first. And then alongside, if your body weight's halting, so to speak, I would also check waist measurement at the same time. Because if your body weight's holding, and so this is what we're doing with some of the guys that their body weight's holding now, and I'm checking pictures and so on, I'll take their waist circumference as well. So if you're holding lean mass and your waist circumference comes down, you're winning. If that's stalling or it's not moving or it's not budging, then we're at a maintenance and we're at a plateau, right? So that's when we've got to get strategic with, okay, what's happening with the nutrition, what's happening with the training. Now, in your aspect, Rob, like, I'm sure you got your step, like, you're pretty consistent with your steps, but you got a dog, so you're definitely consistent with your steps. So we're looking at, like, activity, looking at training. Now, I'm not somebody that says no to aggressive dieting. It can work, but for the right person. But you have to have the right setup to maximize it. Now, aggressive dieting, you're looking at about a 40% deficit here, so it's pretty huge. So, and sometimes even more. I've been there. I've tried every diet that's ever been there. It was pretty successful, but you only do it for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks max. Like, this is crazy. Like, it's super, like, the benefit is, though, it can have similar, anti-hunger effects like GLPs. So after about 5 to 7 days, like, the hunger goes away and you just cruise and you're just dropping body fat pretty fast. but you can't train with output. There's just no way. So if you enjoy training, this isn't the one for you. So that was the thing that kicked me in the balls. I was like, I can't do this, man. I need to train. Like, it was winding me up. I just didn't have any output to train. It dropped body fat fast. I didn't lose any muscle, but I had to eat a ton of protein. The weight training was like 1 to 2 sets, compound lifts, heavy work, in and out. I was in and out of the gym within 20 minutes. It was pretty, it just drove me nuts. So I was like, no, I can't do that one. So for me, it's a no. It can work though for the right person, but it has to be the right person, the right individual to do it. Now, if you're going to go for more of the aggressive type stuff, now I'm not saying go to that aggressive, but if you're going to hit bigger fat loss targets and you're going to need a slightly bigger deficit, you just have to control that training volume, Rob. Like, it has to be on point, right? So you're able to recover from it. And you do have to accept that some points you're going to feel hunger. That's okay. Like, as long as you're not getting cravings and you're not feeling flat because the training's driving you flat, that's the biggest kicker that people I find is like they overtrain with it as well, because they're trying to train the body fat off, whereas you just need to diet it off. Allow the signal that you're trying to produce in the weight room to keep the muscle tissue. Remember, weight training is just a signal to keep muscle tissue. You send the right signal, you'll keep it. You have to recover from it, okay? So there's a couple of things there to think of. Now, in your case, what I would do is I would push performance metrics and focus on those. In the back end, let your coach check your waist circumference measurements and check your body progress pictures and so on. And you just focus on performance, because the byproduct is going to be body fat loss. It's inevitable if you push at that level, and just finding the right stuff for you to do.
Yeah, nice. That's good. Because I mean, if I look at my own body pics, I sort of, you know, the upper body leans out pretty nicely. It's the typical, like, if I could just cut off the muffin top. So, you know, like if I could do a back shot or chest, arms, shoulders, I'm like, hey, I'm leaning out looking good. But just carrying that typical, you know, 40-year-old male, just a bit more stubborn weight around the midriff than I want.
Yeah, it's tough, man. The midriff one, it's always the last to go. And it's typically like even the love handle area and the low belly button stuff, that's not really going to drop until you get about 12% for most people. And that's when it started to really come off. And then you're going to see a big difference if you hit like 10%.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you're really going to see it flatten out really, really well, really thin skin or much thinner. But it's having the process after that, you need to be very specific. For me, the most important thing is the gaining phase after. It's not the fat loss. Fat loss is easy. You just have to be patient, man. Like, it is what it is. You just diet it off. Because what's going to happen, the leaner you get, the smaller that deficit needs to be. So it takes time. You can't rush that last bit off. Because if you're keeping that deficit huge, you're risking muscle loss because you're leaner. So that deficit has to be small enough that you're still seeing body fat changes, but it's not big enough you're accelerating it, because you're just going to look emaciated. You're going to lose muscle, right? So that's when you get that lean. Now, the biggest advantages you have at that point when you're 10, 12% is you're very insulin sensitive. So you can start stacking muscle really, really well, but it has to be a specific way to do it. So I would you can do slow calorie intakes up. I would just typically find your your new maintenance levels, because obviously your body weight's going to be lower, so you might need slightly less calories than you normally would. But obviously your activity is going to start to play into that as well, depending on how much you're doing. But I'm a fan of using different macronutrients on the way back up. And I think there are definitely studies on this. And I think Lane Norton just did a podcast with Bill Campbell on this as well, where Bill was, they're only just talking about this. I've been doing this for like 15 years. I've seen this in the last 15 years with clients, where they had people in a surplus overeating protein and they didn't put any body fat on. I was like, no shit, we've been doing this for years. Like, I've been doing this with guys putting on lean gaining phase. The study was by Jose Antonio. And they had, so at the moment you'll listen to hypertrophy protein intakes and so forth, and there'll be, you don't put on any more muscle mass over 1.6 to 2.2 grams per kilo of protein intake for your body weight. 1.6 to 2.2 grams per kilo. Like, That's true. So like, well, why would you eat more protein than that? Like, well, if you really look at, then this is from anecdotal experience for the past 15 years or so since I've been using it, and the study that it was done on, they gave people, it's obviously humans, up to 3.4 grams per kilo of body weight in protein, no negative side effects in kidneys, nothing like that. And what they found, the guys that were eating the super high amounts of protein compared to the lower amounts, and the lower amounts were 2.2 grams in this study, the guys on the 3.4 grams didn't put any body fat on. They stayed leaner for longer. So what's that telling me? It's telling me that I can keep you anabolic on a lean gain phase longer. So now you don't have to mini cut. You don't have to go catabolic to drop body fat. You're going to stay lean if I'm strategic about the macronutrients I distribute for you, right? So if I'm driving your volume up now from a deficit, I'm obviously going to give you more carbohydrates because I'm going to crank you in performance. I want you to train. You're insulin sensitive. Let's send a signal, right? But then as I need to start driving the calories up a little bit more, I'm going to give you more protein. Then if the volume goes up a little bit, boom, I might give you more carbs. And then boom, I might give you more protein. Fat stays low. Because if you're in a surplus, and a true surplus, your insulin is going to be higher, 100%, right? And at that stage, insulin is like a fuel selector switch. So if you're running sympathetic, you're driving a surplus, your insulin's high. If insulin's high, your body's ready to store. It's ready to build. And if I give you an overconsumption of fat over carbohydrate, which of the macronutrients is way easier to store as body fat? Which one's already prepackaged? Fat. So it's going to go, well, you're doing sympathetic training. You're doing training that warrants carbohydrates. And I haven't got carbohydrates. I've got fat. But I can't use that. It's too energy expensive to make into a glucose. So I'm going to store that for later. And I'm going to take carbs from somewhere else, which is typically your muscle tissue, if you haven't got carbs coming in. Makes sense? So it's easier to turn muscle tissue into glucose than using fats, because it can take ages to do that. So it can store it because it's prepackaged, store body fat, use something else. So it's going to break muscle glycogen down, liver glycogen down, and use that because you're in a surplus. Now, if I've got protein high and I'm giving you carbs to train with and I've got fat low, what's it going to do? It's going to keep you leaner for longer, and it's going to use the carbs to fuel performance. Just the top end of carbohydrates, if I'm looking at weight training, grams per kilo, it could be anywhere, depending on how hard you can train, it could be 3 grams per kilo, 4 grams per kilo. Some guys, depending on your body makeup, it could be 5 grams per kilo. I've gone on some people without putting body fat on, but the protein's high. And obviously now you have to factor in, well, what's my digestion like? Can I digest that type of stuff? So this is where we need good rest, recovery, your digestive system in a good place before we do things like that. So that's why we have foundation phases. You lose body fat, your digestive health gets improved. Do you know what I'm saying? So this all sets you up for a good rebound phase, but it's having it set up right. That's the thing. And all we're doing then at that point, Rob, is going slow. It's like compounding interest. It's like you're putting your money in the S&P 500, you're waiting years to see the return. Like, it's a slow process, but you stay leaner for longer and you're way more anabolic. So all I'm going to be looking at is 0.2 to 0.5% per week body weight gain. Every week. Sounds slow, but you do that for 8 months and you look totally different. The problem is when you're doing it for like, oh, let's do a quick 8 week build. I'm like, you ain't building anything in 8 weeks. It's impossible. Like, it ain't gonna happen. 12, 16 weeks, you'll see a difference. But if I can keep you lean gaining for a good 6, 8, 9 months, then we do a mini cut for like 4 to 6. That's all you, at that point, if you've done this correctly, all you need is like 4 to 6 weeks. The fat loss phase, and then boom, you go straight back to building again. And this is what I see that works way better. And you'll see this, some of the bodybuilders now are starting to use that type of strategy. Might not be identical to myself, because there's obviously a little bit of extra supplementation, let's say, going on for the big guys. So it's a little bit different, let's say. But for natural guys, that's a great strategy to use as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate that.
No worries, Rob. Any other questions on that, guys? All makes sense? Cool. So we were going to talk about fat loss and maintaining muscle. We actually talked about building muscle and maintaining low body fat levels. We did the opposite way around. So we got a double whammy tonight, boys. There we go. So losing body fat and keeping muscle, we just have to send that signal. Your training has to be the driver to signal that muscle mass to stay. So you want to be hitting the muscle two, three times, or each muscle body part, 2 to 3 times a week. So that's why when people go into, like, I typically use full body training at that point because I can frequently hit the muscle pretty well, or I'm using an upper lower style split, right? So you can do it that way as well. So twice a week, 3 times a week, it's either full body or upper lower, nice and simple. But that loading has to be heavy enough to stimulate tension. So if we're moving too far away from mechanical tension, we're not getting the stimulus to hold on to muscle tissue. So if you go in 1 week, for example, and you hit X amount of weight on 8 reps, and you go in the next week and you do 25% less for 8 reps. Okay, is your technique better? Yes. If it's improving the technique and you're spending more time in positions and so forth, that could potentially do it. But if you've gone in, you're under-recovered. So like what Dale was speaking about earlier, under-recovered, didn't really hit it hard. Some's going to be okay. But if we're not giving it that close stimulus where we're close to where we need to output, we're going to atrophy. Because muscular atrophy starts to drop after about 48 hours for that muscle you hit 48 hours previous. So you got a protein synthesis response. Okay, it goes up, you get a stimulus response, and then after 48 hours starts to drop. So you start to atrophy. So this is why we want 2 to 3 times a week. Because as we give it the stimulus, it drops a little bit, then we hit it again. Drops a little bit, then we hit it again. Does that make sense? So then we can keep growing and growing and growing. So if I'm doing 3-4 body sessions a week, I'm laughing. So I can hit the chest 3 times a week. I can hit my quads 3 times a week. I can hit the back. I can hit everything. So that's the type of setup that I would typically keep if I'm going to be running fat loss and keeping all the muscle tissue. But again, you have to train to perform as well. So not driving down to those low calorie ranges. How does that setup sound for you, Jeffrey?
Very close to what we're doing. So it works. Greg has me eating the right things and the guy's running the right program, it sounds like. So now I just have to do it.
Greg's got the nutrition, yeah?
Yeah.
Love it, man. Do you run any protocols right now? Anything going on?
Protocols in what sense? Sorry.
Is it just running nutrition, or have you got any other like blood work protocols running?
Oh, no, we've done blood work, genetics. Now we're fixing things. Yeah, we did the whole... I told him the other day, like, you know, you join the community probably because either you want to get bigger, you want to get smaller, you want to be fitter. And then partway through you realize, well, the real benefit is a health problem I'm not going to have in 20 years because we did a genetic test and uncovered something that is asymptomatic. So when people ask about like getting blood testing and genetic testing, I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's useful for the fitness aspect, but really there are all these other things you discover that like, oh crap, we got to deal with that first. So in some ways I don't want to say I got distracted from the fitness part, but you're like, oh, we have to deal with these problems. And that ended up being 3 or 6 months of attention to figure out that stuff.
Yeah, man. Think of it as foundation work. You're setting the foundation. If you're going to build a big house, you need a good foundation set.
Yeah.
Right. And that's all you worked on. So you're probably in a way better position now to drop 20 pounds of body fat like that because you've done the groundwork.
Yeah.
It's good for you, man. Well done. It's genetic. We found some good stuff with Thompson, and we put some stuff in place there that a lot of doctors haven't even touched on. No, Thompson? I think. Like the
it's so common, but there's so little about it. It's just like, yeah. Don't eat this, don't eat that. It's not like telling me eat this to perform better, right? It's kind of like it's like don't eat this so you don't die, but it's not like eat this so you thrive. That's the difference.
Yeah. So we got a lot to battle with Thompson. So we can't push him too, like we got to push him hard. He's going to train for sure. But if we push him, the problem with his genetic enzyme deficiency is it's going to drive oxidative stress quite high. So there's a blockage somewhere, like based off the genetic issue. So if we're running glucose, which he's going to need to fuel performance, there's going to be blockages, which is going to drive oxidative stress. So it's not like he's never going to eat carbohydrates again, because he can need to perform. So we have to put things in place to help manage oxidative stress and alleviate the pressure off that blockage. So we have to direct it somewhere else. And now we've seen his genetics, we can help him do that with specific supplementation, specific antioxidants, peptides as well. We've run a few peptides as well to just drop that oxidative stress and solidify the cell back up. And it's working a treat. Like, he's had some great recovery apart from the other week when he was ill, which we sorted that out with a little peptide as well. That was good. And he's back on track now, kicking ass in the gym with some leg workouts. You're doing good. And Shilash, how are you doing today, bro? You're muted, man. There you go.
Everything's good. I have a big workout as soon as we get done with this call. My recovery is good.
Yes.
I think the recovery is probably the biggest key marker for me, that I can see I can get right back even after the travel or eating bad or all that. It used to take me a week, 2 weeks, you know, to get back on track. Now I can click back on 12 nice. Hours. I could have a crappy day in 12 hours. I'm hyper-focused.
Man. Did you take a look at the supplements I sent through to you? Do you manage to order any?
Yeah. I ordered the one with the methylene blue.
Yep.
Level up. And then also, I'm just waiting on the mail on the hydrogen tabs.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that methylene, the mitochondria, so it's the mitopep or something like that. So the methylene blue is pretty high in there. And so I think it's like 10 milligrams. So just be aware of the urine, I guess I mentioned. But the mitochondrial support in there is very good. So you've got L-carnitine, you've got PQQ, and I think there's CoQ10 in there. So your cells are going to be upregulating. So the CoQ10 is going to help. And this is where I think I see the benefit of it. Because obviously, I think Ben did a good podcast on methylene blue the other week, which he just released. So the guy on there, they do troches of methylene blue. I think Ben uses them. I think I've tried a couple of them as well. They were pretty effective. So what methylene blue does, if you think about your mitochondria, there's where energy is made, there's something comes in called the citric acid cycle, and that's where hydrogens get transported over to something called the electron transport chain, where ATP is made at the end. But basically, everything you eat gets shuttled down into this cycle, and they're made into hydrogens, and they get cycled off. And there's five components to this electron transport chain. And complex number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So complex 1 and 2, B2 and B3 hand hydrogens over to this, okay, complex 1 and 2. Now, complex 1 and 2, they need CoQ10 to hand off to number 3, right? So if you're deficient in CoQ10 or certain nutrients around there as well, B2, B3, you're not getting as much carryover here, right? So if you need an upregulation of requirements of B2, Thompson, right, you get less of that. Methylene blue, so if this is sluggish, you're not handing off to number 3 and number 4. Methylene blue goes straight to complex 4 and affects that. Boom. And you start making energy from there. So that's where they've seen a big benefit there. So what you'll notice there, Shilash, is complex 1 and 2, they're relying on CoQ10. You've got that inside that supplement as well. So you've got a carryover now of complex 4 is being upregulated. Complex 1 and 2, boom, they're carrying over from CoQ10. So you've got these hydrogens pummeling through, right? So we just need to make sure your B vitamins are in a good place. Because you need B2 and B3 to keep, or B vitamins in general, to keep the citric acid cycle churning the hydrogens over the electron transport chain. Make sense?
And I ordered that beef jerky too. Sorry.
Yeah. Did you order the crisp ones?
Both the crisp ones and the plain one and then that a Wagyu option. Because especially on my trips, travel, or trying to make up that nutrition. the bars I had, I thought, you know, they look great, they sound great, but I'd eat one and it's supposed to have 20, 30 grams of protein in it. I was still hungry. And it really didn't seem like it did much. And it doesn't feel like you're eating real food. So hopefully, you know, the jerky and things like that, that actually
This will do it, man.
food give, you know, helps me out in that phase.
Yeah, this will do it. It'll do it. Because what are you going to get with the beef jerk? Like, you think the protein bars now? Like, I think I was saying to you on the call that it's just like protein. They're just like chocolate bars, man. Like, they've got protein in them, but you've got a lot of sweeteners, sugars. There's some fibers in there as well. Don't get me wrong, but for the most part, it's a chocolate bar, right? So you're going to get that. I need something else, you know. Whereas you look at something like a beef jerky, you're chewing on that stuff for a while, right? So it's not easy to just swallow down. You got to chew it. So the actual effect of mastication, and you get the amylase going in your saliva, and so it starts to, when you sort of masticate, you release the specific hormones that associate with, like, the people injecting GLPs and things like that. You get those hormone releases from chewing, right? So you're getting PYY release as you chew more. Cholecystokinin, which is another hormone that starts to release out of the gut because you're chewing. So the more you chew, the more those hormones go up. So the hunger signals start to drop, right? So it's a funny, there was actually a study done where they actually forced people to chew a specific amount of times when they ate food. And there was one group, I think they chewed on average 12 to 15 every bite. They chewed 12 to 15 times. There was another group, every bite they had to chew, I think it was 40 times or 35 to 40 times. And then they just let them ad lib eat whatever they wanted. And the group that chewed 35 to 40 times ate 500 calories less than the other group. And it was just ad hoc, eat what you want, all go for it. And they ate 500 calories less. Now that's because they had the hunger hormones from chewing. Yeah, the hunger hormone release, which is pretty much like what you would get with GLPs. And like, it's not as aggressive by that as that by any means, like you're taking a drug, but at least you got stuff that you can handle specifically that's in your control, right? So you can chew more. So, and that takes intent. You have to be intentional about that, because when you sat down and people like sit there watching TV and they're 100 miles an hour, if you sit, take your time. And now you're intentional, you eat, you chew. Notice that if you have a meal with friends and you're out at dinner in a restaurant, you're conversing, notice you, depending on what restaurant you go to, by all means, but you typically won't eat as much as you would if you're on your own at a buffet type of thing, right? Because you're conversing, you're chewing, you're taking your time, and those hunger cues kick in before you finish your meal type of thing, right? So things like that can help. So if you sat, chew your food. Every bite, I think, I can't remember the name of the numbers, but typically what you're going to do, sit down before the meal, take five deep breaths. In between each bite, take your bite, put your fork down, take 5 seconds, go again. And five, you need to make sure you chew your food in between as well. So it's the rule of five. Five deep breaths, 5 seconds between each bite, or put your fork down and 5 seconds before the next one. Make sense? That's the best way to do it, man. But that beef jerky will sort you right out, Shalash. Don't you worry. You're
Got
better
it.
than chocolates. Good man. Well, boys, any more questions before we wrap up and let Thompson get to bed? He's over in the UK as well. He's going to get some beauty sleeps. He had the legs today. He's going to hit some cardio tomorrow, I think. Have a good rest. Any questions, guys? You all good? Boys, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, and love coming on a call and chatting shop with you boys in any way we can help. And I'll be putting up some new challenge workouts this weekend as well, so get ready, they'll still be rolling. And catch you all in the WhatsApp group. Anything you need, just let us know. Okay, boys, have a good
Cheers,
rest of
Gavin.
your day.
See you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a good Thompson.